You're listening to Trivé Talks Travel on Tucson Business Radio.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Paul Hardison from Trivé, and this is Trivé Talks Travel. And this is the inaugural radio episode of what hopefully will be a continuing discussion about travel in pretty much all aspects. And I'd like to introduce our three guests. To my left is Crystal McDuff. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. And to my right is Teresa Peralt.
Hello. Nice to be here with you.
And we only met recently, so I'm glad you're here too. And on the phone, we have Chuck May, who is, are you in Oklahoma, Chuck?
Yes. Yes, I am. Just outside of Eufaula, Oklahoma, on a lake called Eufaula, the largest lake in Oklahoma, overlooking on my porch. I can see the lake from here. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and life is good.
That's great. And Chuck and I know each other. Chuck and his family participated in our trip to Maine earlier this month, and we had a pretty good time with lobster, didn't we?
We did. I never thought I'd get tired of lobster.
You did?
And you know what? I didn't.
Oh, very good.
We had so much great fun, and the lobster was terrific, and Trivé did just a marvelous job.
Well, thank you. So really, the way I kind of envision our hour here is to really just have a personal discussion of a very simple question, which is, why do we travel? Because there has to be a reason why some people really make a conscious choice to want to explore beyond their backyard, whether it's across the country in the U.S., which is a big country, or around the world. And so the idea here is just to rather get your personal reflections on why you travel and why you think it's a benefit to you. So it's going to be very free form, very relaxed, and hopefully a lot of fun. So I guess the way we'll do this is we'll start with Crystal. I'll ask a question, and this can go off in different directions too. You know, if other questions pop up, don't be, you know, tied down to a rigid structure. Let things flow, and then I'll go from Crystal to Teresa, and then to Chuck, and then we'll go back. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay, so the first question, I jotted some down this afternoon to ask everybody, and the first question is, well, what motivates you to travel?
I like adventure.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And that's what I find with travel. It's always an adventure to see new places, experience new things, talk to people, new people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why. I love a good adventure, and travel provides that for me, whether it's in the country or outside of the country.
So it sounds like that when you decide to go somewhere, whether it's near or far, that you get kind of psyched about that as far as,
yes,
you get a sort of a palpable sense of excitement about going somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've been known to wake up on a Saturday morning, decide on a long weekend that I want to go somewhere, and I go, you know, and it might be not too far away, but I really enjoy that about it. So plan travel is a little more difficult for me because I can't contain myself. I can't wait.
So. Well, that's good. It should be sort of free form as far as, you know, don't be too tied down to a specific list of things to do. Sort of you go a winding path of what you feel like doing when you go somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. It's difficult for me to plan a day-to-day trip. Just because I never know what each day is going to bring. Uh-huh. You know, weather can affect that. But the people that you meet can also affect that, too. And you may decide that, you know, you're going to go, say, kayaking. And you may talk to a local person that says, oh, you should really, you know, go hiking or do something different. So I like it more free form.
Sure. Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Teresa, what about you? What really drives your desire to get out there?
I'm curious. I'm just always curious about what something really looks like, what the people really are to talk to, whether I speak the language or not. I never really have a problem communicating with them. So I think curiosity is more what drives me. And I just, I have sort of itchy feet, I guess. And I like, when I travel, I like staying for a longer period of time, too. I like being more of a traveler than a tourist. And I like what you said, Paul. I don't have a checklist. Like, I spent quite a bit of time in Italy, and I didn't have that checklist. Like, you got to go to the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You know, it was getting lost. That was really cool. And had some of my best memories were getting lost.
Well, yeah. Well, that's good, because, well, when you get lost, you learn.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be intentional. You may not have meant to get lost, but it's, I guess that's what you're saying says a lot about you want to be more sort of immersed in the culture and not just hit the, you know, the popular spots that
Absolutely.
Are, you know, the popular spots are okay, but there's certainly more to a destination than the places where everybody goes to.
Mm-hmm. And you really hit on it for me too. It is about the culture. It is about really, you know, like my favorite place to go whenever I go to a new area, the first place I like to go is just a local shopping center for food, like food shopping center, not like touristy items or a hardware store. And I feel like you can really get a good feel for the place when you see like what people are buying for dinner.
Right.
But yeah, I do. The culture is a big driver for me. Mm-hmm. It's a big driver.
Well, Chuck, what about you? You know, I remember when you emailed me the list of places you traveled, which was quite impressive. What really, you know, gets your blood going to want to go somewhere and travel?
Yeah, writing that list was really an experience. You know, I didn't realize I'd been so many places. Truly, and I forgot about Israel. We spent 10 days in Israel. But, you know, I really liked what Teresa said about curiosity. And my fear is that the new generation coming up has a lowered sense of curiosity, possibly a result of instant communications and social media and web and Google searches. And this was really brought home to me when my oldest son spent a summer in New York City at Columbia University as an intern, and my youngest son and I traveled to New York City to be with him, and then we both, all three of us, went down to Washington, D.C. on the train, which was a great experience. But then walking around D.C., our youngest son seemed really nonplussed. Now, he was about 15, 16 at this point, 17 maybe, he really seemed totally unimpressed with Washington, D.C.,
Wow.
Which is hard to do. You know, I'd say, oh, look, you know, there's that and there's this, and you've heard about this place, and look, there it is. And you kind of go, I've seen pictures, yeah, big deal. You know, I'm thinking, you know, man, where's your curiosity? You know, where's that drive to find out more and to explore and have these adventures? And that really is distressing to me that I think the newer generations are losing that sense of curiosity and that sense of adventure that comes from exploring and doing new things in new lands. But as far as why I like to travel, yeah, it's curiosity, but it's also the adventure of exploring new places. And seeing how those places change me. Yeah, it's all well and good to see Versailles, but how am I changed by having seen the grandeur of the French palaces? You know, what impact does that have on me? And am I able to turn that into kind of parlay it into a better me?
Well, Your thread of discussion, Chuck, and get Teresa and Crystal's thoughts on this too, as far as the younger generation, I guess the Instagram generation, because when you mentioned, was it your son, Chuck, in DC?
Yeah.
So is Instagram and instant communication and other platforms kind of making people feel like they've already been to these places because it's so visual, or what do you think's going on there, Crystal?
I think it's twofold. One is, you know, with the internet, people can travel from their armchair, literally, you know, and you can see all kinds of places on there. And then secondly, I think the younger generation, they don't know a lot of the history that has taken place in the United States or in the world. So some of the sites that they might see, they don't really have a real connection with it, where someone who's a little bit older might have that connection. So I think it's twofold. Uh-huh. I think that's part of it.
Teresa?
I don't know. I think it. I'm not sure how a young person feels right now because I'm not in that category. However, I do think there's a connection between the explosion of the internet visually and an attempt at communication and building relationships and sort of a falseness to that, and then the reality of actually being somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, talking about lobster is one thing, but eating a lobster
or cracking it open. holding, Chuck can relate, holding a live lobster in your hand.
So to me, I mean, I think what you're saying about Washington, I'm kind of like ho-hum myself a little, but I think because of the person I am, I like to like cut through things and go the back way and, you know, figure it out a different way. So that's what because I'm basically curious and I want to learn about stuff. But I'm not qualified to talk about what the young people, you know, what they're doing, because it's just the world is so different from when I was that age. I mean,
right.
Ridiculous. I mean, I was hitchhiking at that age. I don't think people hitchhike anymore.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure, but, you know.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I don't want to really, you know, put down Instagram or such, because I do know people, millennials and such, who do travel a lot. And some people really get into it really young. And that's good. But when you think more broadly about the population in general, yeah, I do wonder about how many of them really have an appreciation for internet versus actually being there.
You know, I think that's what makes planned travel kind of cool, is because you don't really have to think about the detail part, which is kind of, you know, unless you're really into making the logistical stuff, it's kind of not the fun part about travel. So I think that's why planned travel is going to be really kind of a big deal, because, you know, you're kind of used to things happening. You know, you're used to jumping on Google and figuring something out. Now you have, you know, you have these, you know, Trouvé that can, you know, plan a trip for you, mm-hmm. and get with the details so you can do more exploring. I don't know. I think there's something to that. Like,
right. So I want to have Chuck jump in here. So Chuck, what did you think about, you know, our trip to Maine? Because that's pretty much what we do, is it's small group travel. We put together an itinerary that we think is going to be interesting and really immerse the group into where we're going. And what do you think about that, Chuck?
Oh, we had a fabulous time. I think, Paul, you really put together a great itinerary. It was a mix of history, art, the museums, the maritime experience, and, of course, the food. It was a really good experience for us, all packed in like 4 days. I mean, that's all we had was 4 days. And it's ironic with me when I travel, because travel to me, I don't travel to develop relationships. Unless maybe it's with somebody I'm traveling with. I don't think, gee, I want to go to Peru and meet some Peruvians. I just don't think that way. I want to go to Peru to see things. But then when I get there, I develop these relationships and these associations and a rapport with the natives that becomes so valuable and become the most important thing of the entire trip. My parents, when they were still alive, they did this a couple of times. They would travel to Bavaria. Wow. They had been in several places in Europe and had done all the tours, et cetera. But they loved to go to Bavaria, Garmisch-Partenkirchen, and stay in one place for 3 weeks. Just in one place. And really get to know the locals. And I thought, at the time, I thought, well, you know, how boring is that? But then as I become, you know, older, and I'm, you know, over 40 now, I think, boy, that's the way to do it. And you really get to know, you really experience the culture of the area, and you get to know people, the shopkeepers and the restaurateurs, and you become immersed in that culture. And what a great way to do that.
Yeah, and that's, Chuck, that's what I was saying earlier about adventure. I think that's part of it, is talking to the people that are there, getting their recommendations for things, and learning more about how they live and how they spend their time there. And you know, I'm glad to hear you say that.
What really helped us out in Portland, Maine, was the fact that we had a couple of times where we had some free time, and my wife and I and our son and his friend went with us. We would Uber around, and some Uber drivers don't talk much, but the ones that did were a wealth of information. It was like having a tour guide on board driving the car, and you get that insider's look.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that actually leads to another question that I have for all of you, which is, well, you actually answered a question already for me, which is, what aspect of traveling do you enjoy the most, whether it's culture or adventure or what have you? But, you know, especially now that I'm actually in the travel biz a bit, and I'm kind of trying to understand the overall landscape of people who travel and those who don't, what do you think are the biggest impediments as to why people don't travel? Because, you know, there's that group of people who travel and travel a lot and they enjoy it, but there is a equally as large or probably bigger group of people who do not travel. I mean, I know that. I'm sure you know people who don't travel. Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is fear. You know, I mean, people are afraid to travel, especially outside of the country right now, with what's going on in the world. And I think that's something, of course, that everyone should consider before they travel internationally. But also, if you plan if you make a plan carefully, and especially if you go through a travel agency such as Truvet or a group travel company such as Truvet, I think you get the feeling that you're going to get quality without, and you'll be able to relinquish that fear that you have about it. So I think it's a little bit of fear of the unknown, but also fear of travel, fear of what's going to happen, what could happen. And I don't let that stop me, but I think it does stop a lot of people from doing more travel.
Uh-huh. Teresa? Mm-hmm.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, as you were saying it, I was making a note to myself. I think fear, and especially for international travel, as you said, and I think, again, this whole concept of small group travel is how you manage that risk or that fear. It's hard for me to imagine, because I get such joy and I'm so grateful when I get to go on a trip that I can't imagine being afraid of it, right? But there are people who are. I've been very close to people who I've had to really basically lug along until they get the hang of it. It's like, oh, this is really cool. I really enjoy it. The other thing I think is tricky is the whole flight thing. I think the details are overwhelming, particularly if you want to go and have a quality trip internationally. The details can be, you know, just, it's just, when do you pull the trigger on a flight? Oh, maybe it'll be less tomorrow. Maybe, you know, it's just too many details. And I think that's why planned small group travels around your interest, and maybe an interest combined with a geographic area. I feel like that's a real wave of the future, not to sound too trite about it, but mm-hmm. I think that's going to open. I hope that opens up for people, especially the people who are a little nervous about it.
I agree with you, Teresa.
I totally think that's right. Yeah.
Chuck, what do you think?
Well, although really, I think the younger generations are more of the follow your nose type. I'm thinking of our oldest son on their honeymoon. They took off and they went to Hong Kong. And I said, okay, great. You know, Hong Kong's great. You know, what are you going to do then? Well, we don't know. We may go to Vietnam. We may go to Thailand. We may go to Japan. So they were just following their nose. They were not with a group. And that I think may be what a lot of the younger people are doing. I'm not, you know, saying that our son is typical of everyone of that age, but I think there may be more of that. Just, you know, we'll on the wing and a prayer, we'll just play it by ear and see what happens and see what, you know, captivates our attention and where we want to go and what we want to do. As far as international travel is concerned, I'll bring up once again our trip to Israel, which is fabulous, by the way. We went 5 years ago, I believe it was 4 or 5 years ago, on a 10-day tour. We didn't know Paul and Truve at that time, so it went with somebody else. But there's a group of 30 of us, which is the number that can fit onto a tour bus. And at one point, our onboard tour guide asked, you know, how many people here were advised by their friends that they were crazy to go to Israel because of all the potential violence? And, you know, quite a few of us raised our hands saying, yeah, that was a concern. He says, over here in Israel, we're saying, why would you go to America? There are shootings in schools and in malls and in movie theaters. Why would you go there?
Oh, hey, Chuck, that reminds me, Israel. I have been to Israel. I've been to Haifa and to Tel Aviv and over to the Jordan River. This was all the way back in 1983, and I was in the Navy. I was enlisted. I was on a carrier, the USS Independence, and we had a port visit. And I remember driving around, being in a local school bus, not school bus, just local transit bus, and there was a guard with a machine gun in the bus. There were people with machine guns on rooftops, and that, you know, same kind of thing. But it's different in the sense that they're there for security, but people perceive security differently. And it's good how you sort of flipped it around what people think of in here, because when you, like you said, perceptions of what's going on in a location can really affect how people think.
Yeah, well, it really was a sense of security that in Jerusalem or in Tel Aviv, you know, there were, you know, the young militiamen with the guns on the street corners and looking out for you. A whole different kind of ball game over there, and you really tend to appreciate that. And I would say the other reason why I don't think people travel is because air travel is such a hassle these days. You know, you talk to people, and I was with AAA for a number of years and would hear the horror stories, and I could tell you stories, and I'm sure you all could tell us stories about the trip from hell that went wrong and lost luggage and missed connections and no one was there to help you. And air travel is just, you know, frightening to so many people these days. Yes, it's inexpensive. It's the quick way to get there, but is it worth it in the long run? You know, you really got to have to, you know, look at the distance involved and driving to the airport and then renting a car at the location, your final destination. And it really, is it worth it? I think a lot of people are saying, man, I'm just going to drive.
Yeah, and driving does have its own benefits in a lot of ways.
Love a road trip.
Exactly. Yes, road trips. As a grad student, I drove from New York to California and back in 3 weeks, 20 days exactly. And I was able to visit friends and family and do things that, you know, when you fly over, you can't do that. So,
nope.
So, okay, another sort of broader type of question for all of you is, and I think you've touched on it a little bit, but how do you personally think travel improves the quality of your life, and how do you think traveling can improve the quality of society in general?
Well, I can say, you know, how it improves the quality of my life is, you know, I get to have adventures and see things and do things that I can't do from Tucson, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's always the biggest part for me, is to be able to see different things, do different things, hear different things, taste different things. I mean, through immersing yourself in another location or culture. I don't really know about how it would help society. I don't quite understand.
Or maybe rephrase the question in the sense, do you think there would be And it can be in many forms as far as education, awareness of other parts of the world. How do you think, let's just say, hey, tomorrow there was this international initiative by every nation on earth to make or to allow everybody to travel. Like, let's say, and I had this idea a while ago, is, you know, every high school student in the country should take a study abroad course for a semester. Every student should go somewhere out of the country. And how do you think that would affect them? How do you think it would change the perspectives of the nation as a whole as time goes on? Or do you think that would change anything at all?
Right. I would think that if it would change anything at all, it would be, enhancing awareness of different countries and different cultures and different peoples on this planet. Mm-hmm. And give whomever is traveling, be it, whether it's a high school student, college student, or a mature person, an awareness of what other people go through. The perspective of, Chuck mentioned it earlier about why would someone want to come to America with all of the stories they hear here about us? It's just putting that in perspective. Mm-hmm. and understanding it. But I think just an increased awareness of other people on a global level and an increased understanding of the challenges that we all face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Teresa?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Paul, about I feel like it should be mandatory in school, in the young, maybe not grammar school, but definitely high school, mm-hmm. college. It should be mandatory to bring them across the pond, so to speak, or internationally for at least a semester, because it does change their view. That you can't not change their point of view. And I think we're so insulated in the United States about... we're just insulated. We're protected. We drive from state to state and we don't know what border crossing is. So I really think that it's something that, should be part of our education. I know should be is not the right words, right? But it must be part of the education because we're missing in the boat. Because in internationally, young students are learning English. Young students are learning about the U.S. and they're traveling here. And our kids aren't, and I think we're really missing the boat on that one, because it will change their view. I'm 1,000,000% convinced that it will change their point of view. Mm-hmm. I really am, because they still see life for real. I like what you said earlier, Kristen, about they get to see what's really happening in the country. That's the point. Mm-hmm. That's the point. And it's for real. It's not in a book. It's not on Facebook. It's the real thing.
You make a good point. As obviously reading and learning about a place or a people is important and useful. However, it's a completely different thing when you're actually there, because you have to have that on-site experience to get the real flavor of any location.
Exactly.
And, yeah, you have to have both, essentially. Mm-hmm. Chuck, what do you think?
Oh, I agree. I think all three of you have used the word perspective, and that's what it boils down to me, is it changes your perspective and your feelings and your opinions and your attitudes towards places internationally, certainly, but also, when I say the words New Jersey, we all have a certain image that pops into our minds.
Sopranos?
Or I say Georgia, or I say Texas, we all have certain stereotypes that invariably pop into our mind, and we think, oh yeah, oh boy. And I used to think that Long Island was one big blob of concrete until I went there and realized that there are crops grown on Long Island. There are rural areas on Long Island. And New Jersey has some beautiful spots, and upstate New York, and I have been in Texas, and I have been in Georgia. And once you visit, these stereotypes are blown to smithereens, and the same is true internationally. You think about the Congo, for example, and we all have preconceived notions of what the Congo may be like, or reasons to go there, reasons not to go there. I'm not sure. But once you go there, you know, then your perspective changes and you learn an appreciation for other people, other ways of living, lifestyles that may be foreign to you, but from which we can all learn. I remember when I was 17, my parents took my sister and I to Europe, and it was obviously very eye-opening. But one of the things that I thought was pretty cool was that there's no liquor laws, or at least there wasn't, you know, at that time. And if you're old enough to reach the bar, then they would serve you. And I thought, well, that, as a kid, that's pretty cool. But still, I mean, that's the whole, you know, that's part of their whole ambiance and the lifestyle they live. And you know, if you don't visit these places and learn an appreciation for this, then you're really selling yourself short.
I think you're right on, Chuck. Thank you.
All right. So that sort of brings another question to my mind that I know you're all going to have different answers. And I want to answer this question to myself, but I'll do it last. Was there an age or an event or an experience that prompted you to really consciously say, I want to start traveling, or all of the above? Was there a specific trigger that you said, yes, I do want to do this, or not? Or did it just happen sort of gradually and naturally?
Well, I worked for 6 years as an event planner and marketing director for a national firm up in Phoenix. And of course, that got me involved in travel, not just within the United States, but a little bit internationally too. And I was managing about 18 different programs on an annual basis and traveling to places that I wouldn't necessarily go if it were up to me. But I got to see just wonderful parts of our country, wonderful cities, wonderful people in them. And I think that really piqued my curiosity with travel. It was something from that point on I wanted to continue to do. And I wish I still had that job today. You know, I'd be loving it. But it was very, it was just a great job to have and really piqued my curiosity about travel. And it, I've just kept it going.
That's good.
Ever since.
Oh, very good. Teresa?
Well, I guess my response to what got me thinking about travel or curious about travel is you're all of the above, right? Mm-hmm. But it, you did make me think about my first big trip. And I remember it very clearly. I was a pretty young kid, and my mother and my grandmother from Boston, we drove up to Canada to basically to see a church, right? And the church terrified me, but the trip there, and once I got to Canada, I loved it. Mm-hmm. And it was just great because my mother just basically put us in the car and took off, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved every bit of it. It's like you said, I've done a fair amount of work travel. And work travel's okay if you can add days on beginning or the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is work, right?
Right.
People think you're having a great time. And you do. It is interesting.
Course.
And what I like that you said is you get to see places in the country you might not have seen.
Exactly.
St. Louis was like that for me. I fell in love with St. Louis, and I would have never gone to St. Louis.
And Boston is my St.
Hey, girl,
Louis.
Wait a minute. I think that that answers, but it's stuck. It's stuck.
Right.
Traveling is a really, it's part of my nature.
It became a way of life.
It's part of my nature for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Chuck, what do you think? Was there a trigger that prompted you to begin traveling, or how did your story evolve?
Well, I think really why I first started traveling and fell in love with it was just simply the escape. the rest and relaxation, and not having to work, not having to be part of any organized endeavor to learn things, or, you know, didn't have to do anything. Going to warmer climates in the Caribbean, for example, was always an escape, and just to lie on the beach and not think about anything for several hours at a time, and have the guys come around with the drinks with umbrellas in them. I mean, that was, that to me, that kind of travel, it was rejuvenating, and something that really appealed to me. And it wasn't until later, you know, after I got out of my 20s, that I realized, yeah, I can actually go to places and do more than just vegetate and, yeah, and hit the bars. You know, right. you can do things and learn and experience. And that's why really I can't say enough about organized tours. And I think that that's something that's going to be, as was mentioned, Teresa or Crystal said that it's going to be an up and coming trend in travel. And I think that trend has already manifested itself, where you do let somebody else worry about the luggage and making the reservations and making sure that your room is ready when you are. And because then you can concentrate on the finer points, learning about the area, visiting the museums, visiting places you may not even know about. If you're just on your own, you're liable to miss out on so much.
You know, and Chuck, I remember when we were at the Tate House Museum in Maine, and where we learned about the shipmast building industry in Maine, how big the pine trees had to be to get harvested to make shipmasts. That's, yes. Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. I have this thing about sailing ships, and that just fascinated me and gave me more of a insight into that whole industry, how the sailing ship shtick evolved over time and how they actually did it.
Yeah, that and the impact on the culture at that time with George Tate. This was back before the Revolutionary War, so he was building these masts for the British Navy. Mm-hmm. And stripping the wood and rolling the logs down into the bay, mm-hmm. and then sailing them across to England to be made into masts. And, you know, that for those that don't appreciate history, they're liable to repeat it and make the same mistakes again, as the saying goes. And that, along with the Maine Maritime Museum, was just fascinating to me as a kid from, you know, landlocked Oklahoma or landlocked Arizona. That was just a wonderful experience and a chance to experience a lifestyle that you can get no other way. You can't teach that in books. You can't teach it on Google. You can't teach it in the classroom.
Yeah, and I want to briefly share with you sort of my how I ended up here, essentially, with Trouvé and travel and everything. And I call it the unexpected journey, and then I think of hobbits when I say that. You know, I was in the Navy. I was enlisted for almost 5 years, so I got to go overseas. And I remember how absolutely green and stupid I was. Right out of high school, I was dumber than a brick. It's like I was amazed at that time. And I got to visit a few countries when I was on my ship. But, you know, travel as a way of life certainly did not enter my head at that time. And then I came back and I went to college and I went to grad school and yada-da. And really, but I can pinpoint the exact time and the exact place where it all hit home. And it's when I went on my very first small ship sail in the Caribbean. And for some reason, I drooled over doing this for 6 months before I decided to do it. I found the webpage for Island Windjammers, and I looked, and I drooled, and I looked, and I drooled, and it's like, okay, I'm going to do it. And for some reason, well, this was new to me because, mind you, I have done research in Hawaii a lot. I have been to Hawaii maybe 35 times, and I love Hawaii. But I thought one day, you know, if for no other reason, I should visit the Caribbean because it's closer, if for no other reason. And then I found this company that does these small ship sales, and I remember flying down to St. Martin and spending a night in a French hotel where I was the only English speaker, and it was great trying to say I want to eat that on the menu, which was great, and a cat that had a mustache, which was very cool. But I was standing on the pier looking at the ship, and I had this existential moment that, you know, I've traveled, but this was different. And I had kind of this existential moment of I'm doing something, I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone. And for some way, I'm stepping out of my comfort zone, and I asked for this one way or another. And it was a fabulous sail, 12 days from St. Martin down to St. Lucia, go island hopping. I absolutely adored it, and I still do. And that was really the moment in June of 2016 where it's like, I'm addicted to this, and I didn't really know I was. And so it all really flowed from there. And I could not have predicted that. Mm-hmm. And it happened. It was sort of all wrapped up in life changes and what I want to do with myself. And that's kind of how I ended up here too. But it's interesting when you decide to actually get out of your comfort zone. That is something that people have a hard time doing sometimes. And we all have agreed. We all have kind of decided to do that one way or the other. But yeah, taking a risk, taking a personal risk, then it's not a huge risk, but it's just something you have not done before. And you aren't quite sure how it's going to go. So, and I'm sure other people have had experiences that kind of trigger something, but that's something that kind of triggered me. And I'm glad it happened, because otherwise I wouldn't be here with you right now.
Well, I had what you call an existential moment when I went to Scotland and Ireland. And that trip had been on my bucket list for quite a while. And I went about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And my heritage is Scottish on my dad's side. So as we landed in Edinburgh, I looked out the window and saw the green grass alongside the runway. And, you know, we think we know the color green until we go to Scotland or Ireland, and it takes on a whole different meaning. But as that plane landed, I just felt like I was home. Uh-huh. And just my whole tour of Scotland and Ireland, just amazed at the green color, mm-hmm. and in addition to everything else that was there. But that was my existential moment, where it was just everything was right with the world, mm-hmm. and this is what it was all about. So
yeah, that's great. Yeah, and those types of moments don't happen that often in a lifetime. Teresa, have you had any such type of experience?
I'm giggling because as you were describing your wonderful and beautiful trip on the small sail, mm-hmm. I recall a sailing vessel that I was on that was a historic wooden boat, mm-hmm. Which was very close quarters for a couple of weeks at sea, mm-hmm. and it proved to be really challenging. And in fact, it was off the coast of Maine in mm-hmm. one of those tall ships kind of boats, which was beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is going to be so great, so romantic. Not if there's no wind. Right. You know, and not knowing the people that I'm on the boat with is not a problem for me. But being that close in quarters for that long a time got to be pretty interesting.
You get to have some best friends for, you know, two weeks or 3 weeks or what. Yes. And absolutely.
Was there a turning point when it was okay?
I'm not sure I would do it again. That's like, check that off. But I would love to experience it under full wind, right? From the air.
Yeah. It might be different.
It would be. Yeah, I suspect it would be.
Yeah, you had like half of the sailing experience. Without wind experience.
Well, we definitely had the food and the beverage down.
So Chuck, did you have any type of we're calling it an existential moment during any of your travels?
No real epiphanies. Always have loved to travel. I'm looking more and more towards adventure travel, and travel where I can challenge myself, not so much mentally, but more physically. Doing some traveling down in that area. I'm looking at Africa. And I think, you know, that may be more of a mental challenge out of my comfort zone than I've been in a while. I mean, it seems like it's real easy to go to London, and it's pretty easy to go to Tokyo, for example, but where the cultures are so much different than what I'm used to, that really appeals to me to challenge myself.
Right. And I think that's really important. And I guess that goes back to the idea of taking a little bit of a risk to get outside your comfort zone. And I guess that brings up a broader question to me that just popped into my head is, how do we as a society instill the, or encourage people to try different things? Because that's getting out of the comfort zone. Because again, it goes back to a lot of people just don't want to, or even don't even think about it. It doesn't even become a conscious thought. So how do you get people to want to take a little bit of a personal risk and derive the benefits from that? Any ideas?
I think sharing experiences is a great way to do that, and encouraging someone to try it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly sharing the experiences, I know it always intrigues me just listening to everyone here about the trips that that you all have been on and the experiences that you've had. That's intriguing me to do even more travel than mm-hmm. what I have. Some people will never get out of their comfort zone. I mean, that's just a given. But, I think if you lead by example and share your experiences, that will help.
Yeah, that brings up a thought. I remember a friend of a friend of mine made a comment in Iowa once. I'm from Iowa, so I can say this. I was born here. I grew up here. I'm going to die here. I have no reason to leave here. Person who never left their county. And that type of mentality. I mean, obviously in today's world, you can do that. You don't have to go anywhere to live a perfectly good life. That's mm-hmm. that's by far true. However, there is something missing there a little bit. They're missing opportunities. And so how would you, okay, Crystal, you said by sharing, as a way to encourage people to kind of broaden their perspective and view. What do you think, Teresa?
Well, I think Crystal's right. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, how in the heck? But I think sharing is a way. And I think for me, anyway, it's that one-on-one connection. It's that, talking to you, hearing you talk about being in Scotland and Ireland, that just fuels me more to want to be there. So I do think sharing is the way. And my, my preferred method is this, face to face or radio, I guess, but the idea of sharing your experience, because I don't think it's our job to get people to travel. I think it's our job to make it easy. And I think it's our job as human beings to help each other see other kinds of worlds. Mm-hmm. and possibilities mm-hmm. that exist.
Yeah. And I think that leads to shared experience.
Yeah, right on.
You can
go ahead, Chuck.
I was just going to say you can almost tell when you meet someone new if they've traveled much.
Uh-huh. How so?
There's kind of a provincial perspective on life, a provincial attitude, as opposed to a worldview, a wider perspective where. A little more accepting of what's happening in the world, and maybe it's not the way you would live or the choices you would make, but you realize that there's more than one way that people can live this life, and through the decisions they make, and you're a little more tolerant. I've noticed that definitely in people that I've met, that you can almost tell those people who have traveled much and those who haven't. And one more thing, I know our time is running out, and I'll just throw this in. In terms of travel, let's not forget philanthropic I'm thinking of the Peace Corps or mission work, that kind of travel as well. It doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. You can actually go and do other people some good, and it costs very little, but you gain much.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Chuck. Something I'd not thought of before. So.
All right. Let's see. I have one more question for all of you before we start to wrap this up a little bit, although I kind of think we're just getting started. I think we could go on and do this for hours. So that's good, though. And it's kind of sort of a simple question is what has been the – well, let's do a two-part question. What's been your favorite place that you've traveled to and briefly why, and what is a new place you want to go that's at the top of your list?
Well, I mentioned it earlier in Scotland. Definitely was my favorite place. And I've visited a lot of places, but I think I had the most connection with it and just really enjoyed my experiences there so much more so than other places that I've gone, to the extent that my last night in Edinburgh, I was trying to figure out how I could stay in the country and not come back home. I mean, seriously, it was like, you know, it kept me awake that night. And I think that, you know, there are lots of places that I'd still like to see in the world. But I think the number one spot on my list is Italy. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to going to Italy and seeing the history there. You know, the ruins and, you know, all of the things that date back centuries and centuries, in addition to food and wine. You know, but having the opportunity to be immersed in that culture and right. really seeing Italy firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Great. That sounds.
It's all about the wineries and the, you know, yeah. grapes on the vine.
Yes, absolutely. So, Teresa? Yeah.
I'm not sure where my favorite. I have a lot of favorites.
Or pick one of them?
Pick one. Well, I would have said Banff, but it's too cold now. But it is beautiful. So I'm partial to warmer weather. So I guess I would say my favorite was Italy, just because I was able to stay there for a long time in a very remote mountain village, and it was otherworldly. I mean, it was like that Tuscan. It was just beautiful. It was
amazing. I'll be talking to you about that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, because the story behind that is fascinating. It's about an artist from Phoenix, and I'll be happy to share that with
okay.
you.
Okay.
But what's high on my list is Ireland, and I don't think I'm coming back once I go. I really don't. And I know it's cold, so it's like that's going to be the challenge mm-hmm. for me. But yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, and I don't typically enjoy cold weather yeah. either. But you know, I think the beauty there far outweighs the weather. I mean, that was my feeling is. Uh-huh. I didn't care how rainy or cold it was. It was the place to be.
Well, it's also for me thinking about the way I'm trying to wrap my head around the cold is, well, you know, you have to have the, you know, it's that life, death, life cycle, you know, yeah. for the earth, right? And for the green to really sure. be that green, it has to be that yeah. cold.
But they have fabulous wool sweaters and scarves. You'll get
warm.
Into
you
it.
Stay yeah, warm.
There you go. There you go. Great.
Well, Chuck, what about you?
Well, I got to say, Teresa, I'm with Crystal. We need to have a three-way. Your time in Italy, that just sounds wonderful to me. Italy is probably the top of my bucket list, and in particular Venice. But being up in the mountains like that for an extended time, that must have just been fabulous. Beyond that, Israel was just a wonderful experience. Love that country. Want to go back. Been to Banff and Lake Louise. Mm-hmm, those are mm-hmm. nice too, but I guess at the top of the list would be Venice, at least, you know, sometime before it finally sinks into the sea.
Okay. And I guess I'm the only non-Italy choice here. I've been to Italy and I want to see more of Italy, and I love Italy.
Isn't
however,
it called an oddball?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And this goes back to the Caribbean, so no surprise. But on my first sail, we went south, and one of our stops was in Martinique, or was it Guadeloupe? There's this little group of islands just to the south. I think it's of Guadeloupe, actually, and it's called Île des Saints, the Island of Saints. And if you've ever been to St. Barts is the ritzy Caribbean island, French island. It's expensive, and it's well-known. But Île des Saints, where I was like a little St. Barts without all the pretension. and you walk around. It's a fishing village, and everybody has baguettes on the back of their bicycles, and they have Wi-Fi. So then my mind starts to turn. It's like, I can make this work. I could live here. I could live here. You know, I just have to, you know, have a take short ferry ride to go to, you know, the main island to go to the airport. It's like, I could do this. I could do this. And it was just an idyllic, picturesque type of tropical location that was not too remote, but remote enough that it's like, yeah, you're in civilization, but you're not in the middle of Manhattan, you know. And it was so far, it's the place that if I could live there, if I had my choice to live anywhere without any restrictions, that would probably be it. As far as where on my bucket list, that's I'm kind of torn. I'm not even sure I have an answer to that question because I have too many places that I want to go.
That's a good thing.
Oh, that is a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Oh, actually, it's a shameless plug for Treve a little bit, but there's a reason the Cook Islands are on our itinerary because I want to go to the Cook Islands. And of course, the nice thing about running a company is that, well, I can kind of choose the destinations and then choose the itinerary and everything. And I made the itinerary, so it's a three island trip. It's not just going to Rarotonga, but it's another one of those really Polynesian experiences. And so I guess that would be one of the top ones that I would want to go to. So for lack of anything else, but
you know, those are all really terrific. You know, I think about this country and the great diversity that we have here in the United States of places to go and different climates and cultures and cuisines. And then I think about places like the Azores, which are on my list. And finally, I'll say Iceland. I would love to visit at least for a week Iceland.
Reykjavik, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, Iceland is, you know, you've got volcanoes and ice on an island.
The Blue Lagoon.
I've
heard so much about it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us for this first radio show for Treve Talks Travel. And I think we've accomplished our goal of just exploring the question of why we travel. And I think we hit on a lot of the reasons why we do what we do. And I certainly am more than likely going to invite you back. And I think this is going to turn out to be a really fun adventure. And so Crystal and Teresa and Chuck in Oklahoma, thank you very much for joining us, and onward and upward.
Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Paul.